Your Health is supported by the North Carolina Cancer Hospital, serving you with innovative research and unequaled care. UNC Healthcare is leading, teaching, caring.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, presented by 97.9 FM, WCHL, and UNC Family Medicine. Your Health, providing practical health-related news and information for our community, as Dr. Page and Goldstein specialize in patient care at UNC Family Medicine. And now, Your Health on WCHL.
Welcome to UNC Family Medicine's Your Health, supported by UNC Healthcare. I'm Dr. Christy Page.
And I'm Dr. Adam Goldstein.
On our show today, Adam, we will be talking with author Ryan Boyle about his book as a part of our series on medicine, faith, and miracles. A powerful story.
Yeah, really looking forward to it, Christy. We get privileged to hear some powerful stories that I think are so much to learn and teach and share, and we've got another great example today. But first, we also have some really great research that matters about wine and things that determine consumption that I wouldn't have thought about.
About community efforts to increase CPR.
About some real interesting research that offers promise, first I've heard in a long time, about potentially a vaccine for HIV disease.
And finally, a first pre-surgery breast cancer drug that's newly approved by the FDA.
Well, let's talk about this very first research that matters, Christy. And this was research about wine and several factors that influence how much wine is consumed. And this was research that was done in Iowa State and Cornell University among 73 students. We better find out if they were of legal age.
Yeah, they were all, well, I hope of legal age, that drank at least one glass of wine per week. And they were divided into these pouring stations where they were asked to pour themselves what they considered a normal serving of wine, which we know, according to the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, a normal serving of wine is considered 5 ounces. So 5 ounces of wine is what's
And we know
to
when
normal.
We're paying $10 for a glass of wine, they measure it really clearly at the,
yes,
the store. That's, we don't get any more than that, and frequently maybe a little less. But here's the question. Before, if you read this article, Christy, if I said, would you drink more wine if you were holding the glass or if it was on the table? Do you know what the answer would have been?
I would have probably thought it would be the same. I think if you'd asked me about the size of the wine glass, which they did in this study
if
also.
If it was wide versus tall.
I think then I might sort of have some intuition that if it's tall, you might pour less. And if it's wide, you wouldn't might necessarily realize how much is in there.
Well, this is what they studied. I like this particular study. And it was reported as part of the one of the journals that looks at these issues on substance use. And they varied these factors to see how much wine people actually pour and presumably drink. When they're wider, for instance, compared to taller, the students poured almost 12% more wine.
And when they were holding the glass, compared with if they had the glass on the table when they poured, they also poured about 12% more wine.
And then finally, when there was not much contrast between the glass and the wine, so you have a dark glass and dark wine, not a whole lot of contrast there versus a clear glass and dark wine, that dark contrast, dark wine, they drank 9% more. Certain things that would just say, huh, you want to cut down on how much people drink wine, particularly that good wine in my house? I'm going to give you a tall glass, and I'm going to make sure it's a clear glass.
Well, I do think this is important as people are trying to reflect on their alcohol use, and we know there are dangers from excessive alcohol use, and realizing that perhaps when people say they're drinking, I mean, doctors know, if you say that you drink one or two glasses a day, that it might be more than that if you're really considering the size of that glass. So I think as we're all trying to pay attention to, you know, how much you're really drinking, that these sorts of things could be helpful. Get taller glasses and always set them on the table when you pour.
And I suspect when we go to the restaurants and they give us these incredibly wide glasses, we'll have a better sense of what's happening out there.
Yep.
Well, let's listen to our very next research that matters, Christy. And this goes from like the individual right up to the population, looking at does training the population and doing cardiopulmonary resuscitation, those heart resuscitations when the heart stops out in the community, does that make a difference? And can you really change population statistics?
So, I mean, to give this a perspective, we have 300,000 people in the U.S. who have cardiac arrest every year. and about 90% of those die. And so when they looked at this in Denmark, they realized that about 10 years ago, very few people were stepping in to perform CPR, and that very few people who had cardiac arrest survived more than 30 days.
And Copenhagen University, where this study was performed and published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, they really looked at this time period where they did this population level education to train people really on starting CPR, which occurred very little before they did this and occurred a lot more after they did this. It actually more than doubled. What did they find in terms of any decrease in the death rate from those not getting CPR?
Yeah, so they found that the chance of people surviving cardiac arrest, either until they got to the hospital or longer, increased from 8% before the study and 22% after they had this increase in CPR. And their chance of survival after 30 days also about more than doubled between 2001 and 2010. Based on these efforts.
And only one out of five people before the study, if as a bystander, would have stepped in to perform CPR. And then it increased in 2010 to 45%. I found that amazing. I think I'm a little scared to know what the statistics would be like in the United States. If I would hope it would be at least 21%, but I don't know.
I would hope too, but it really does show that making these community efforts from a public health perspective really can save lives.
There could have been other reasons why the survival benefit improved,
sure,
better hospital care, but certainly I don't think there was a downside to this.
I would agree. I think the next study we've got sort of up and downsides to, down for the monkeys, but up for the potential for humans. And this is about studies done in monkeys to find a vaccine that might clear HIV infection.
Yeah, this has been a fairly elusive research, but in this particular study, they had developed a vaccine they thought would work, and they attached a small amount of the virus causative of HIV in monkeys, and they attached it to a common virus that a lot of people are exposed to, and injected that in these monkeys to see whether or not it offered benefit. Did these monkeys contract HIV, or were they protected from HIV, never showing HIV? And like you said, a little half full, half empty.
Yeah, well, so they tested the vaccine on 16 different monkeys and found, and then up 2 months later, they infected them with the HIV equivalent, SIV, for monkeys. And it turned out that about seven of the 16 got sick and passed away, but the other nine were infected and lived, and as they followed, eight of those after 1 year had no evidence of infection.
This was published in the journal Nature, indicating because Nature publishes really the top research in the world, and this really indicates that there is something not yet ready for human trials because the death rate way too high. But on the other hand, we may be on the verge. This could be a major breakthrough. And we say could because it's early. There needs to be a lot more testing. But it is an exciting piece of research that matters, that one day we have great drugs now that can control HIV in most people who get it. But we might be on the threshold in our lifetimes, hopefully, certainly, of a vaccine that could also prevent it from happening to start with.
It's really a big deal.
Very last research that matters, Christy, about the very first breast cancer drug approved by the Food and Drug Administration for pre-surgery.
So we know breast cancer is common. We all know somebody who's had it. Second leading cause of cancer-related death among women in our country. And about 232,000 will get diagnosed just this year, according to the National Cancer Institute. And about 20% of those cancers have this certain protein, the HER2 protein, in which case this breast cancer drug may be helpful.
And this was a complicated study with really kind of complicated data, but the really take-home line is that the frequent therapy for some of these women would be mastectomy based upon the very aggressive nature of the type of cancer they have. And with this particular drug, for certain subsets of this aggressive type of early breast cancer, it can shrink the cancer down enough where they actually may not have to have a mastectomy. They could have a lumpectomy or breast-conserving therapy.
Agreed. So we've talked a little bit about this new breast cancer drug approved by the FDA.
About these vaccines in monkeys, not yet ready for prime time, but the glass is still half full.
About survival increasing with people doing more CPR in Denmark.
And about how to literally keep that glass maybe a little less than half full by having it be taller and clear.
That concludes the Research That Matters portion of our show. After our break, we will return talking with author Ryan Boyle about his book as a part of our new series on medicine, faith, and miracles. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page.
UNC Family Medicine's number 2 ranked national program is rapidly transforming healthcare through excellence in teaching, clinical care, and research. To participate in UNC Family Medicine's efforts to move innovative ideas into action, call 919-843-5112 or email yourhealth@unc.edu.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, a presentation of 97.9 FM, WCHL, and UNC Family Medicine. Now, more of Your Health on WCHL.
Welcome back to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. Today on Conversations, Christy, we have the real privilege to be talking with author Ryan Boyle about his new book, When the Lights Go Out, part of our occasional series on medicine, faith, and miracles.
Ryan, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
You are just 19 years old, having written a book and certainly experienced more of life than most 19-year-olds. Tell us, give our listeners a background of what happened to you.
Well, I was at a birthday party when I was 9 years old, and we decided to go out to the driveway that he lived on. And it was a steep driveway running out to the road. And we were playing on a big wheel toy when I lost traction and slid out of control down the driveway into the path of a speeding pickup truck. And the truck hit me directly in the back of my head, which resulted in the back of my skull being crushed, and a large portion of my cerebellum was not recoverable. So through emergency brain surgery, they removed a large portion of my cerebellum, as well as my skull. And I was in a coma for 2 months from then. And then I was in a rehab hospital in New York for the next 7 months.
Wow. What an amazing and difficult chapter of your life, where I imagine your parents and loved ones weren't sure for a long time if you were going to live or die at that point in time.
Oh, yes. It was definitely touch and go for quite a while.
One of the things you include is this element that the brain surgeon or the neurosurgeon told your parents at one point that prayer was the only thing that could save you. And I wonder, as you've reflected on it and learned from your parents and doctors, how much a factor you think that was in your survival.
I think it was a tremendous factor. Of course, the determination of the patient and the medical assistance they receive is absolutely crucial as well. But there are some things that people on this earth cannot do. And through the power of prayer, I believe that many miraculous things happened which wouldn't have otherwise.
Why do you think that advice came from the neurosurgeon? I think Christy and I, in medicine, we believe that we are spiritual providers, but I'm not so certain. When I first heard and read about that in the book, that was a little surprising to me. Is that because you think that at that time there was a feeling that everything had been done and nothing else could be done, or do you think it was some other reason?
I think it was because that neurosurgeon did all he could do. so prayer was ultimately the only thing that could go for me. And also, I believe at that time, the priest or the bishop of the county I was living in was in the waiting room with my parents, as well as the priest of my parish and the bishop's secretary.
So it was very natural.
Yeah.
And maybe that opened the door for the surgeon to talk more about faith, having other people of faith in the room and with your parents. You know, speaking of the neurosurgeon and, you know, prayer and spiritual factors, he told your parents that he operated on you like you had a chance, although in his heart he really didn't think you had a chance. How does that make you feel? How do you reflect on that?
Well, it makes me feel very sad, like when I think about it in depth, like today. But I tend to not think about it in depth. But it just emphasizes how grave of conditions I was in, and how there was a very, very good chance that I would not make it, and that I think he was preparing my parents for a very unpleasant time, if you will, in their lives, because I don't think it was very easy on them throughout any of the time I was in the hospital.
We're talking with author and survivor and amazing courage, Ryan Boyle, about his book, When the Lights Go Out, in our series about medicine, faith, and miracles. And Ryan, I don't think anyone hearing you today would be short of amazement at how far you've come. And I wonder, before we take a break, what advice would you have for parents out there today who have a child or a loved one that's really facing such a serious injury as the type that you endured? What advice would you have for them?
My advice would be just to take it one step at a time in the parent's perspective, and above all, have patience, but they need to believe in the well-being of their child. And my neurosurgeon said to my parents at the time of my accident that this is not a sprint, it's a marathon. Mm. So just to give you an idea of how crucial patience really is at a time like that.
And thinking of that marathon, I know we're going to have to take a break in just a moment, but where was writing this book in your process? Like, what made you decide to do that in your healing process?
Well, I decided about 6 years after my accident, because so many people have approached me, and once they heard what had happened to me, they said, wow, you should really write a book.
Hmm. We're going to take a short break. When we return, though, we'll continue talking with our guest, author Ryan Boyle, about his new book, When the Lights Go Out. We'll be right back with Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page.
Your Health is supported by UNC Health Sciences Library and NC Health Info, working together to connect people everywhere with knowledge to improve health. Visit nchealthinfo.org for answers you can trust.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, presented by UNC Family Medicine. Now, more of Your Health on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. We've been talking with 19-year-old author Ryan Boyle about his book, When the Lights Go Out, as part of our series on medicine, faith, and miracles. And before the break, Ryan, you shared with us your story of this horrible accident at age 9, months in the hospital, and what turned out to be a true miracle of your survival and recovery. And we just wanted to go back to thinking about that survival and miracle. And when you graduated, after having been out and everyone knowing just the tragedy that had happened, when your classmates and teachers saw you walking alive, and then walking with only a single cane, which I guess is the first time you ever did this, what was that experience like for you?
It was truly amazing, because when I walked in there, as you could probably assume, I was very nervous about losing my balance and falling in front of all these, like, 800 or some odd people. But once I successfully did this, it was amazing. I just went up to receive my diploma, and at that time I knew the spotlight was on me, so I better not mess up. And when I received my diploma and turned around, everyone started clapping, and then they began to stand up. And it was just such a surreal experience from my life and something that I'll never forget.
Well, and I don't think anyone listening today can forget that. And you weren't yet 13, were you?
No.
No, and here you're graduating, but we're thinking graduation from high school. You're talking graduating from elementary school. And I wonder, let's flash forward a little period of time. You must have had some more experiences. You've had more graduations. What's it like having learned to overcome, but now you're living with disabilities that you didn't have? It couldn't have always been easy.
No. Easy is one of the farthest words you could use. But I just always think about other people who have it worse than me. A lot of my friends are quadriplegics, for instance, and I just couldn't imagine having to cope with everyday life in their situation. And to me, it's truly admirable how they do that.
You know, Ryan, I'm hearing this and picturing that graduation, and then hearing the hope and triumph in your voice and comparing yourself to people who have it worse. And I'm having a hard time continuing with the interview, honestly. I'm going to shift to something else, like a bike. What is Like a Bike, and tell us about the influence that that had on you in this healing process?
Like a Bike was something that was brought up by Gary Fisher. He is the father of the mountain bike, and I met him at the grand opening of a bike store And he gave us the idea of this bike built in Germany, but it has two wheels just like a regular bike and a frame and all that, but it just doesn't have pedals. So you would have to sort of walk with the bike until you get enough momentum, and then the momentum will let you cruise on down the road. So obviously that being imported from Germany would be quite expensive. And we're not exactly inventors of mountain bikes or anything. So we had to find an alternative way that was more more convenient on our wallets. So we just got a bike and took off the pedals, and that was my Leica bike, and that got me to where I am now.
Wow. Maybe we can put a picture of the Leica bike up on our website for our listeners and viewers to take a look at.
Yeah, that would be great.
We're talking with Ryan Boyle, amazing author of the book When the Lights Go Out, about his experience as a young child, pre-teenager, with the traumatic brain injury and his remarkable story of courage and healing. And moving fast forward, Ryan, you were selected to join Team USA. Tell us about that experience and what it's been like. What an amazing recognition.
It is definitely an amazing experience. Every chance I get to be with Team USA. Over the past summer, I went to Italy and Spain to compete, and I just had the time of my life. I did very well in those races, too. So,
Go USA.
Having a good time and coming in good positions is just the icing on the cake.
And do you think it's ironic that your story began at one situation and really continues to be on a bike? How do you see that?
I see it as destiny because when I was born, I loved to bike. And I was a great mountain biker. And then after the accident, I couldn't necessarily mountain bike anymore. But I did find out about a trike, which is a variation of a regular road bike, but with two wheels on the back to accommodate my balance. And now I am just loving doing that. And I really think it's a perfect suit for where I am now.
Well, Ryan, anyone hearing your story and what you've overcome just to be here and then to pursue and be on Team USA, absolutely remarkable. I know our listeners are going to be eager to hear, to read your book, When the Lights Go Out, and we'll certainly make that available and easy on our website for people to read and share your story. Absolutely a remarkable story. We look forward to hearing what's next from you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We've been talking with Ryan Boyle about his book, When the Lights Go Out. Thank you so much. We're going to need to take a short break, but when we return, we'll answer questions about your health. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. Stay with us.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on 97.9 FM WCHL, sponsored by UNC Family Medicine. Your Health continues now.
Welcome back to Your Health. For the house call segment of our show today, Adam and I will spend a few minutes talking about your health questions and your concerns.
And please send us any comments or questions, stories, whatever you'd like to share with us at yourhealth@unc.edu. And we'd like to ask our executive producer, Erica Lloyd, to read us our very first of what should be some very interesting house calls today. Erica?
After experiencing months and months of exhaustion, I went to the doctor for blood work. My test came back with very low iron, and I was placed on medication for anemia. The medication I'm currently taking makes me jittery. Is there any other option, preferably organic?
Well, I'm glad you found some reason for being tired and something that's treatable. Of course, as doctors, we want to know, why were you anemic, and is the underlying reason for you having this these low blood counts being fixed?
That's right. We always sort of have more questions than answers. Sometimes
right.
I kind of feel like is the anemia really related to fatigue, and is the iron really mean that you're anemic? Because sometimes iron isn't the best test to actually measure whether or not you really have anemia. It might be a different blood test called a ferritin level.
And I also wonder, is it this medication specifically that's making you feel jittery? But to answer your question, is there other option of getting iron? Certainly, you can focus on iron-rich foods, and we can ask our fantastic health science librarians to put up a list of iron-rich foods on our website.
Typically, it's those dark green leafy vegetables like spinach and kale and rhubarb, along with things like tomatoes, very, very good sources of iron.
And you could also ask for a different formulation of the iron. There are different ways that iron can be packaged, and some of them are a little easier on the GI system and might make you not have the same side effects.
You know, one of my favorite ways of getting iron in the diet naturally, Christy, which I think is organic.
What is that?
Taking an iron skillet and cooking in one of those old-fashioned iron skillets, and we've got one, and that's actually a great source of getting elemental iron. And actually, what I'd like to find out is exactly how much iron one gets from cooking in an iron skillet compared to, for instance, getting a multivitamin with iron.
And how much you actually absorb in that. Because we take iron sometimes and don't absorb it. I would be interested in that question. I know you get some from it, but I don't know how much. So let's see if
It helps the flavor of the food.
Well, librarians, we are giving you a lot of questions. Now we want to know how much iron you get in
iron
skillet.
We want you to help
us
with the answers.
Yes, please.
Erica, what's our very next house call?
I know as doctors you're going to encourage your patients to get a flu shot, but every single time I do, I end up getting sick. And I don't mean this is a sniffle or a slight cold. I mean I literally feel sicker than the few times I did experience the flu. This wouldn't be a big deal to most, but recently I began working in the healthcare system, and we're under compliance to receive an annual flu shot. If I don't get one, I can't work. What can I do?
This is such a common thing from people, and we hear it every year. And I tell my patients, and I wonder what you say, Adam, but I feel like people come in and get their flu shot in a germy office and pick up some germs and often get an illness that is a flu-like illness, not necessarily the flu, in timing related to when they went to the doctor's office. And I wonder how much of that is just, you know, picking up germs and that we could combat with good hand washing before and after you leave the doctor's office and good sleep. What do you say, Adam?
Well, I believe in statistics. And we know, for instance, that there are, in any given community, on any given day, there's 1,000 car accidents in a large-sized community, perhaps. And in that same community, on any given day, there might be 1,000 people that get pneumonia. Just by the number of people who live in a particular location, some of those people who have car accidents are going to get pneumonia. But that doesn't mean that the car accident caused the pneumonia or the pneumonia caused the car accident. So in this particular situation, it's the same way. Having a cold is a really common thing that happens to people getting flu shots, with 60 to 70% of the population getting a flu shot. So on any given day, there's going to be a certain number of people who get a flu shot and get a cold. That's just statistics. It does not mean that your case couldn't have been caused by your flu shot, but it does mean on the population level, it doesn't work that way. So we're not saying suck it up for you, but we are saying that it may not be the case that the flu shot actually caused your particular symptoms. And unfortunately, it is a condition increasingly of employment, and you may not have a whole lot of choice there.
I would say, what can you do? It sounds like you have to get your flu shot, which we think is the right thing to do. But I would advise you, go in and get that flu shot. Wash your hands when you're there. Be careful what you touch. Leave there, wash again. Get good sleep. Eat well. Avoid smoking and alcohol and those other things that can help you pick up germs. And
blame someone else.
Yes. And then blame your employment when you get sick.
Erica, what's our very next house call?
At the age of 67, my father was diagnosed with prostate cancer. After a long 5-year battle, he passed away. Although this was over 30 years ago and medicine has obviously improved over time, I'm terrified that I'll succumb to the same fate as my father. Is there anything I can do to lower my risk of getting prostate cancer?
Oh, we're so sorry to hear that story. That's a young age to get prostate cancer and to pass away. And prostate cancer, despite being one of the most common cancers affecting men, unfortunately, we really don't have a lot of great therapies for its prevention or early diagnosis.
We really don't. For a long time, we were doing those prostate PSA tests, but now more and more evidence is showing that that's not necessarily helpful in helping people. And so it's hard. It's hard. There are some elements in the research about certainly avoiding smoking and watching your diet. There might be some links with red meats and high-fat dairy products being linked.
Yeah, we believe that the more Mediterranean-type diet with whole grains and fresh fruits and vegetables, along with regular exercise and avoiding obesity, these are things you could control, may lower your risk, and that's the best that science has to offer today. We really wish you working with your doctor about trying to diagnose it as early as possible, and we wish you the best of luck. Thanks so much for that question.
That'll conclude the house call section of our time today. We've talked a little bit about iron and anemia and about getting the flu shot.
And we want to thank all of our listeners for sending in questions. And you can send in your own questions to us at yourhealth@unc.edu. You can also email us and use Twitter, visit us online, Facebook, visit our health app and send us questions, lots of ways. And we hope you'll join us again next time on Your Health.
We want to thank the UNC Department of Family Medicine, UNC Healthcare for their sponsorship, and our guest today, Ryan Boyle. We hope you'll join us next time on Your Health.
On behalf of Your Health, I'm Dr. Adam Goldstein.
And I'm Dr. Christy Page. And we'll look forward to talking with you again next week. Take care.
The purpose of Your Health Radio is to educate listeners on healthcare issues. Listeners should always discuss their own health or medical concerns with their personal physician or other healthcare provider. Your Health is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
You've been listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on 97.9 FM WCHL, presented by UNC Family Medicine. You can find this or any other episode of Your Health at WCHL's website, chapelboro.com. Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on 97.9 FM WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel station.
Do you love keeping up with all the latest news and entertainment in Chapel Hill and Carborough?
Yes!
Well, look no further. The Chapelboro 2.0 app is here. All of your favorite news, sports, columns, seen around town photo galleries, and of course, streaming WCHL 97.9 live. Already have the old Chapelboro app? No sweat. Visit chapelboro.com today to follow the instructions to install the new one. Out with the old and in with the new. It's as simple as that. Visit chapelboro.com today.
Are you looking for new customers? Try Our Local Deal, brought to you by WCHL and the Chapel Hill Carborough Chamber of Commerce. You offer a deal to the community from your business, and folks purchase it. Everybody loves a deal. With Our Local Deal, your company or organization is featured on 97.9 FM WCHL, on the site at ourlocaldeal.com, and through social media. Want to try the best marketing deal in town? Visit ourlocaldeal.com or call us at 919-933-4165.